Two papers appear in the same top-tier journal in the same year. Same prestige signal, same impact factor, same citation count at launch. One is methodologically bulletproof, careful, reproducible, incremental. The other is theoretically novel but fragile, exciting claim, questionable data set. The journal score for both. Except, the measurement system cannot tell them apart. That is the metamerism problem, and it's been hiding inside science this whole time. Today we're covering five things. First, why journal prestige is a single number compressing something with at least eight dimensions. Second, why reviewers are observer cohorts, people who weight quality dimensions completely differently. Third, why the Matthew effect in academic careers is non-ergodic perception. One early rejection is an absorbing boundary. Fourth, why an AI trained on today's science can never discover what's in its own null space. And fifth, what a specification layer below peer review actually looks like and why it already exists.
Yeah, that is a massive roadmap, but it is so fundamental to how we understand human progress.
Right. And if you are listening to this, you interact with evaluated human knowledge every single day. I mean, you make medical decisions, financial choices, you form your whole worldview based on what experts deem true or high quality.
Exactly. But what if the very instruments we use to measure that quality are structurally blind to the most important details?
Yeah. Today, we are inviting you to completely rethink how scientific knowledge is evaluated. We want you to see the invisible forces that shape the actual information you consume.
Because those forces, they dictate reality, basically.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have two papers sitting on a desk. Both have that golden accept stamp from a prestigious journal.
Right. To the outside world, they hold identical value.
But structurally, they're complete opposites. It reminds me of, like, looking at a 4-star rating for a restaurant.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. Because a single number tells me absolutely nothing about the actual experience. A place might have, you know, world-class, life-changing food, but the waiters literally scream at you.
Yeah, or another place might have the most attentive, flawless service in the entire city, but the food tastes like cardboard.
Exactly.
Rah.
Smashing those two entirely different experiences into the number four. I mean, it destroys the underlying structure of reality.
And there is a canonical term in mathematics for what happens to that restaurant rating and, well, to those scientific papers. It's called dimensional collapse.
Dimensional collapse.
Right. When evaluating the quality of human knowledge, we're dealing with a highly complex shape. The source material outlines at least eight distinct dimensions of quality for any given paper.
Wow, eight dimensions.
Yeah. You're measuring methodological rigor, theoretical novelty, reproducibility, practical impact, data quality, writing clarity, scope, and theoretical contribution.
Okay, so every paper has its own unique geometry across those eight axes.
Exactly. But the measurement systems we rely on, journal impact factors, citation counts, binary accept or reject decisions, they force that eight-dimensional geometry through a one-dimensional funnel.
And when you force eight dimensions through a one-dimensional funnel, the math breaks down in some pretty terrifying ways, doesn't it?
It completely shatters.
Yeah. The sources highlight this foundational concept in high-dimensional geometry called the Johnson-Lyndon-Strauss lemma. It actually calculates the exact amount of distortion that occurs when you compress data from a high-dimensional space down into a lower one.
And the numbers here are just staggering.
They really are. If we take just 10 papers, each with its own eight-dimensional profile, and try to map the relationship to one another onto a single one-dimensional line, like a ranking system, the lemma proves you introduce an error rate of over 152%.
Which, I mean, that sounds impossible, right?
Yeah, I want to pause on that because an error rate over 100% sounds like a typo.
It is, yeah.
But if you visualize it, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Imagine trying to capture a complex 3D object, like a crumpled piece of paper, by only looking at its 2D shadow on the wall.
Right. Points that are actually really far apart on the physical paper might overlap entirely in the shadow.
Exactly. Now imagine taking an eight-dimensional object and looking at its one-dimensional shadow. The measurement isn't just slightly off, it's actively lying to us about how these papers relate to each other.
Information theory gives us another lens to see the scale of this loss too. Evaluating a complex paper on a standard 5-point grading scale retains roughly 2.32 bits of information.
Okay.
But an eight-dimensional quality profile contains about 20 bits. That 5-point scale is only capturing 11.6% of the actual information.
Wait, so nearly 90% of the paper's structural value just vanishes?
It simply vanishes. It falls into what mathematicians call the null space.
The null space.
Yeah, the null space is the graveyard of unmeasured variables. It's everything the metric is structurally incapable of seeing. 7/8 of a paper's reality lives in that null space. Journal prestige does to papers exactly what brand equity scores do to brands. It destroys the structural information that actually matters.
So if the metric itself is just a collapsed shadow of reality, we have to look at the light source casting that shadow.
Exactly. The metric doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Right. It requires an instrument to take the measurement. And in the scientific ecosystem, those instruments are human reviewers.
Yes, and reading through these sources, it becomes totally clear that human reviewers aren't just misinterpreting the metric.
They're actively introducing a second layer of distortion.
Right.
Because they function as observer cohorts.
Precisely. To visualize an observer cohort, just picture a radar chart with 8 spikes representing those 8 dimensions of quality we talked about.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
So a methodology expert reviews a paper. In their mind, the rigor spike is a 9 out of 10 in importance. They want bulletproof mathematics.
Right.
But a domain expert looks at that very same paper, and their internal weighting is totally different. They weight the novelty spike as a 9 out of 10. They're hunting for exciting new theories, and, you know, they'll happily forgive a small sample size to get there.
And then an editor enters the mix, weighting practical impact as a 9 out of 10 because, well, their primary goal is driving future citations.
Exactly. The peer review system aggregates these fundamentally incompatible multidimensional observations and averages them into a binary output, accept or reject.
Wow. So it's a double compression event.
Yes. First, the reality of the paper is warped by the specific weighting profile of the observer cohort. Then those already warped judgments are smashed down into a simple yes or no.
So the differences still exist in physical reality, but the system just renders them invisible.
And physics has actually understood this phenomenon since 1853. Hermann Grassmann studied it in color science. He coined the term metamerism.
Metamerism, like the title of the paper.
Exactly. Two light sources can emit completely different physical wavelengths, entirely different spectral power distributions. But because the human eye compresses infinite spectral dimensions down into just 3 types of cone receptors, those 2 distinct lights can appear to be the exact same color.
Wow. So our biological hardware creates a null space where the physical differences disappear.
Right. And science evaluation operates under the exact same mechanics. 2 papers possess completely different epistemic profiles, but under the restricted light of journal peer review, they look identical. They are metameric.
But wait, isn't the system just broken? I mean, if we know for a mathematical fact that peer review and prestige metrics are functionally blind to 90% of a paper's value, the logical response is that we need to tear down the system and build a better metric, like we are using a broken thermometer.
Well, here is the counterintuitive part. The system is doing exactly what it was designed to do.
Really?
Yeah. Journal prestige and peer review were engineered in an era of physical printing presses to produce a binary executive summary for a resource-constrained world. A journal only had so many pages, it literally needed a binary yes or no to decide what to print.
Oh, I see.
The flaw isn't the machinery of peer review. The critical error is the modern assumption that a binary signal can somehow carry multidimensional information. It mathematically cannot.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because this metamerism problem doesn't just isolate itself to a single paper, right? It scales.
It scales dramatically.
We are talking about how these collapsed binary decisions compound over an entire scientific career. Evaluating a researcher by their lifetime citations or, you know, their total number of accepted papers is fundamentally flawed.
Right, because it assumes the timeline of a career is just simple addition.
Exactly. But the sources map out how academic careers are driven by non-ergodic dynamics.
Yeah, and that distinction is crucial. In a standard ergodic system, the sequence of events doesn't matter. Only the average matters.
Like flipping a coin.
Exactly. If I flip a coin 10 times, getting 5 heads in a row followed by 5 tails yields the exact same statistical outcome as alternating heads and tails. The path doesn't change the average.
But an academic career is deeply path dependent.
Right. The sequence of events dictates the reality of the outcome.
The Matthew effect illustrates this perfectly, doesn't it? An early publication in a highly prestigious journal doesn't just add 1 point to a researcher's lifetime score.
No, it acts as a multiplicative amplifier.
Right. That early win secures visibility. Visibility secures grant funding. Grant funding buys lab equipment and attracts brilliant postdocs, which, you know, in turn generates more publications.
The initial binary decision anchors the entire trajectory.
But the inverse is equally powerful. An early rejection from a major journal can function as an absorbing boundary.
Yes. In probability theory, an absorbing boundary is a state that, once entered, cannot be left. Think of going bankrupt in a casino. It doesn't matter what your future odds were, you have no chips left to play. Ruin is sticky.
Ruin is sticky. So let's map two hypothetical researchers who end their careers with the exact same number of total lifetime citations.
Okay.
Researcher A secures a Nature acceptance in their first year. Decades later, a late career paper gets rejected by a regional journal.
Okay, pretty standard.
But researcher B experiences the exact reverse. They suffer a brutal Nature rejection in year one, are forced to publish their early foundational work in an obscure regional journal, but eventually grind their way to a Nature paper right before retirement.
Right. According to the standard metrics, their lifetime citation counts are identical. The system evaluates them as equals.
But in reality, their career trajectories, their lifetime funding, their influence on policy, the size of their labs, they're completely divergent. Evaluating them purely on the total number ignores the sequence of the path entirely.
Exactly. Science hasn't noticed that the Matthew effect is just non-ergodic perception in academic careers.
So when human evaluation is this overwhelmed, when metrics destroy the underlying structure and errors compound over a lifetime to unfairly shape careers, the tech industry reliably steps in with a familiar promise.
Great. Of course. AI will fix it.
Exactly. AI will fix it. The assumption is that if we just feed all the PDFs into a massive large language model, the AI will process all eight dimensions simultaneously and sort the good science from the bad.
But the sources explicitly warn that deploying AI in this manner doesn't solve the Menomerism problem. It actually makes it permanent.
Because of the generation verification gap.
Yes. We are entering what mathematician Terence Tao defines as a generation verification gap. Artificial intelligence is driving the cost of generating plausible scientific claims to absolute zero.
So we are on the precipice of millions of new papers flooding the system.
Exactly. The volume of hypothesis generation is scaling exponentially, while our ability to verify those claims remains bottlenecked at human speed. And the natural reflex is to deploy AI as an automated verifier.
But the trap lies in the training data, doesn't it?
It always does. An AI trains on the existing measurement system. It ingests decades of historical accepts and rejects. It maps the multidimensional structures to those binary outcomes.
So it literally learns to replicate our exact metameric blind spots.
Yes. It can only measure the dimensions we have explicitly specified in the past. It cannot discover the variables hiding in the null space because the null space is mathematically invisible to the training data.
There is an incredible historical precedent for this outlined in the sources regarding William Farr.
Oh, the cholera example.
Yes. Farr was a brilliant 19th century epidemiologist working in London during a horrific cholera outbreak. The prevailing scientific consensus at the time was the miasma theory.
Right, the deeply held belief that cholera was spread by bad air emanating from rotting organic matter near the Thames River.
Exactly. And operating strictly within that framework, Farr gathered spectacular, meticulously rigorous data. He measured elevation, tracking the exact distance of neighborhoods from the river. He measured air quality and temperature.
And his data produced a flawless correlation.
Flawless. People living at lower elevations near the river died of cholera at vastly higher rates. He had bulletproof methodology, pristine data, but an entirely flawed theoretical framework.
He was measuring the air, completely blind to the water.
Right.
An AI trained on Farr's data would make better predictions than Farr and still never discover waterborne transmission. The null space is invisible from inside the framework.
Because John Snow didn't solve the cholera epidemic by computing William Farr's elevation variables faster than Farr could.
No, Snow solved it by realizing Farr was measuring the wrong dimensions entirely.
Exactly. Snow mapped the deaths to the Broad Street water pump. If AI's primary function is to accelerate pattern matching within our pre-existing frameworks, then the most critical human skill moving forward isn't computation.
It's the ability to question whether we have specified the right dimensions in the first place.
So what does this all mean? The metrics compress reality into a lie. Reviewers are biased by their own internal weightings. Careers are dictated by the luck of non-ergodic sequence. And AI threatens to automate our historical blind spots at light speed.
It sounds bleak when you put it like that.
It does. Yeah. So what is the actual structural mechanism to fix the verification crisis?
Historically, whenever human society experiences a massive breakthrough in our capacity to generate information, we require a corresponding breakthrough in specification to manage it.
Like the printing press.
Right. When the printing press made books cheap, society was nearly drowned in alchemy, religious propaganda, and rumors. We didn't solve that by learning to read faster. We solved it by inventing the scientific method, a rigorous specification layer for evaluating claims.
And the internet. When the internet made global publishing practically free, we were overwhelmed by unstructured text. We solved it with structured data and search indexing.
Exactly. But today, the scientific paper remains the last major artifact of human knowledge that is fundamentally unstructured. It is just a PDF.
Right. It is highly readable to a human, but entirely opaque to a machine.
The structural solution proposed in these sources is not a reform of peer review. It is a new specification layer sitting firmly below peer review.
A specification layer. So we're talking about fundamentally altering the bedrock that the paper sits on.
Exactly.
Reading through the proposal, this takes the form of a machine-readable companion file, specifically called a paper.yaml file. YAML is a very simple, standard data serialization language.
Right, and this file isn't meant to replace the written narrative of the PDF. It sits alongside it.
The sources estimate it takes an author about 30 minutes to write. Instead of burying the core epistemic structure of the research across 30 pages of dense academic prose, the YAML file forces the author to explicitly define it in code.
Yeah, it lists claim one and claim two. It defines the exact methodology utilized.
Crucially, it maps the dependencies listing precisely which claims from which previous papers this new research relies upon. And most importantly, it mandates that the author lists their own acceptance criteria and their falsification conditions.
That's the game changer right there.
But I have to push back on the reality of this. Our exhausted, underfunded researchers who barely have time to format their citations for a PDF realistically going to spend an extra 30 minutes writing code to lay out their own tripwires. I mean, it feels like an academic wish list.
Well, it's not a wish list. It is an active deployment. There are currently 20-plus research papers on Zenodo utilizing this exact structured specification layer. Yes. To be transparent, these are preprints currently under journal review, not yet fully peer-reviewed, but the authors voluntarily structured their own falsification conditions before submission. The infrastructure is real, and the pattern is functional.
Wow.
And when a paper is structured this way, it unlocks what the sources call level 4 verification, automated retraction cascade analysis.
What does that look like in practice?
In the current paradigm, if a foundational paper is retracted due to fraudulent data, it takes the scientific community years of manual labor to track down the hundreds of downstream papers that built theories on top of that specific fraud.
But with a dependency graph built from YAML files, a machine traverses that network instantly.
Instantly. The second paper A is retracted, and automated graph traversal flags every downstream claim in paper B, C, and D that relied on the falsified point.
Think about the paradigm shift here. Right now, we expect unpaid, exhausted peer reviewers to act as human extractors. We hand them 30 pages of unstructured text and demand they dig through it to figure out exactly what the paper is claiming and whether those claims hold up against the methodology.
We are asking them to do the work of specification.
Exactly. But what happens when we flip the script? What happens to the speed of scientific discovery when authors are required to hand reviewers a machine-readable map of their own falsification conditions before the review even begins? Platforms like QED Science are already stepping up to process this exact kind of architecture.
Yeah, and think about what happens when this dependency graph gets large enough. We aren't just speeding up peer review, we are effectively building a real-time stock market for truth.
I love that.
Imagine a global network where the value or reliability score of a modern medical theory fluctuates automatically, the exact second a foundational claim from 30 years ago shifts or gets disproven. We move from static PDFs gathering dust to a living, breathing ecosystem of knowledge that corrects itself at the speed of computation.
If you want the solution in detail, what a paper.yaml actually contains and how the five verification layers work, that's episode 24. If you want to see the same metamerism diagnosis applied to legal judgment, episode 22 takes the same framework into a courtroom.